Welcome back to the Daily Thunder podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Woods, here with Brandon Rabar, Daily Thunder beat writer. Brandon, that was wild. That was absolutely wild. How are you doing on this fine Tuesday afternoon?
I am tired, but excited about more Thunder playoff basketball because that game was wild. It was a lot of fun. And then after the game, you know, I had to wait to see the welcome reception at the airport. I had to see what, you know, read all the comments section, you know, see what people were saying about this series, hear all the national talking heads. It's, you know, it's fun to consume content in the playoffs and like look at the shifty narratives. Like they shift from game to game. And after last night's wild game, there was a wild shift in narratives.
The overall level of productivity, I would say, in the Oklahoma City area was low today. Not a lot of sleep, not a lot of things on people's mind other than what happened last night. Fun to watch. It wasn't for the most part until it was. It was honestly, I can't remember a playoff game where the Thunder won where they played that poorly for most of the game. Do you have any that come to mind?
Not that come to mind. I know the stat was out there that 38% was the lowest the Thunder have ever shot and won a playoff game, which makes sense. You're not going to win many playoff games or any games period. Or maybe it was just the lowest they'd shot all of the 23-24 season and won a game. Maybe that's what it was. Either way, you don't win very often shooting that way, but you do win very often when you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander taking over. You win often when you shoot 23 of 24 from the three-point line and the other
free throw.
Yeah, big distinction. See how tired I am? I can't tell the difference between the free throw line and the three-point line.
I would love to see a 23 of 24 night from the three-point line at some point.
Yeah,
maybe game five.
when the Thunder shoot 23 of 24 from the free throw line, while the Mavs shoot 12 of 23 from the free throw line, those are the things that can make you win a game when you play as poorly or shoot as poorly as the Thunder did in game four. That was, for Thunder fans, I asked, you know, is this the most nervous, most anxious you've been in the last 8 years? And the answer was a resounding yes. Like fans talking about like pacing the living room floor, heart palpitations, all those things. Thunder playoff basketball is definitely back when you got those playoff feelings again.
Are you familiar with the fitness wearable called a Whoop?
Man, I'm going to age myself, but no.
So similar to maybe like a Fitbit or like an Apple Watch, like the tracks just heart rate and stuff like that.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I'm seeing it. Yeah, I see it now.
Looks like this.
You could have sent me a Google search. Got it.
My Whoop literally thought I was doing an activity based on my heart rate. It was like, do you want to log this activity? My heart rate peaked at 12:06 a.m. I can't tell you how unhealthy that is for your heart rate for an entire day to peak right after midnight. But I believe that was around the time that Chet went to the free throw line. Truly a wild viewing experience. If we were going to draft reasons the Thunder won last night, I think number one, like if I had the first pick, I would pick the free throw line for Dallas. If they make six more free throws, we're talking about a 3-1 series.
Dude, we should have made that the theme of this pod. That would be a great podcast theme, like draft the reasons why the Thunder won that game.
What would be the next pick? What would you say?
I would have to pick Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I
think that was one of the best performances of the 2024 playoffs. You know, we've seen some great Anthony Edwards performances. Jokic just had a great performance or two, obviously. Derek White, But to me, what Shea did in the circumstance of the game and situation and you know, how the Thunder were playing and how this was going to go 3-1 or 2-2, all those things, and the difficulty of the shots he was making and how consistently he was making them. And it wasn't just the shots. Obviously, you know, 34 points, only 6 free throws, 2 of them intentional. But, I mean, the blocks, the steals, 0 turnovers, the assists, the rebound. He was everywhere. He was incredible last night. So, yeah, I would have to go with Shea.
And he was steady, like, most of the game. Like, it wasn't like he only turned it on in the fourth, which he did elevate in the fourth big time. That was superstar stuff late in the game. But he was really good throughout. Like, he kept them afloat, kept them connected when it honestly, like, that 11-point halftime lead felt like such a gift. Like, it really felt like a 20-point game most of that game.
Yeah, it did. The Thunder just couldn't get anything going offensively, but Shea just kept him in it. It was always within striking distance. That could have got out of hand. Mm-hmm. He doesn't hit a few of those buckets in the third quarter. You know, all of a sudden, instead of, you know, a 10-point lead, it's a 17-point lead. Like, things like that. It could have got out of hand. He kept it close enough and then took over in the fourth, and they were getting stops and they were turning the ball over and all the things that, you know, this Thunder team can do. Nobody else was really hitting shots besides Shea, except for some big buckets down the stretch from, like, Kaysen Wallace, Lou Dort, J-Dub had a couple.
We'll get to Kaysen.
Yeah, we'll get to Kaysen. But Shea was just incredible. Just incredible. MVP performance from Shea last night.
I looked up at the score. It was like 4 minutes left in the second quarter. The Mavs had 44 points. I'm like, this is a good number. Like, we usually win games when the other team has 44 points in, you know, so close to halftime. They just could not hit a shot. They could not get the ball in the basket. Wiggins out in transition. It's like, okay, well, at least we're about to get an easy two. And he doesn't finish. Another layup going to the basket, he gets fouled on. Those are and ones almost always. Doesn't go in. These are just, there was just like a lid on the basket that was incredibly, incredibly annoying. And it became more annoying the more the game went on. But I mean, they shot 9% from three in the first half.
Yeah.
And they won the game.
Yeah, that's what's so crazy. Because this is a good three-point shooting team. We know that. It was the best three-point shooting team by percentage in the NBA this season. And a lot of those were good looks. Now, credit the Mavs defense. Obviously, they were shutting down the paint. That affects the whole team. That affects the shot selection, all those things. That said, still, so many of those three-point attempts were open looks from good three-point shooters that just didn't go down. Mm-hmm. You know, if a few of those go down, obviously the whole nature of that game changes. But yeah, the fact that at one point the Thunder like shut down Kyrie and Luka to something like, I can't remember what it was. I'm just going to throw it like 6 of 20 for like 9 points or something like that. I can't, obviously that math doesn't work at all, but it was something crazy. I can't remember exactly what it was. The Mavs were up 44-33. Like you said, like, it was because the other guys, the role players, were hitting shots, but the Thunder couldn't capitalize until, of course, the second half when the Thunder just clamped them down. Shea took over, and other guys started hitting some shots as well.
It's been laboring the Dort Luka matchup so far. Everything feels like a struggle for both of them. It just feels like hard work for both. If Dort is able to force a miss, it feels like incredibly hard work. And if Luka scores, it felt like incredibly hard work on his part.
Or watching Luka complain to the refs and hard work for fans of the game.
Yes.
Go ahead.
But after four games, it feels like Lou Dort has just done a phenomenal job.
Yeah. Lou Dort, this entire playoffs, what he did to Brandon Ingram in round one and what he's doing with Luka. And of course, we have to, you know, preface this with, we know that Luka's not 100%. That said, whatever percentage he is, he was much, much better against the Clippers than he's been against the Thunder. And I think a lot of that is credit to Lu Dort and the hounding physical defense that Dort is playing. He's been phenomenal in these playoffs. And then, you know, the paint protection that Chet's providing has been key. Like, the Thunder are just kind of shutting off what the Mavs want to do. They're forcing the role players to beat them. And to their credit, PJ Washington, obviously on an incredible heater the last few games. He really won them games 2 and 3.
The shooting has been unbelievable for me.
It has been. And to the Thunder's credit, they're sticking with their strategy because they've seen the numbers throughout the regular season. And they're like, you know what? We're not going to let a 2-game sample size affect what we want to do here. We believe the numbers will bear out. And in game 4, they bore out. Like, they, like, if the role players beat us, the role players beat us. But this is what the numbers say. Like, throughout the season, PJ Washington has been a below average 3-point shooter, even on open shots, even on corner 3 shots. So we'll give him and Derek Jones and Josh Green those shots. We're going to put Lu Dort on Luka. We're going to trap Kyrie on the PNR. We're going to double him when we need to. We're going to throw Cason Wallace on him. We're going to protect the paint. We're going to try to take away the lob threat. We're going to help on the weak side. And, you know, it's a 2-2 series. And I think that the, you know, going back to OKC, I think that they believe in the numbers. And if PJ Washington's going to win this series, they live with that, I think, is the feeling.
Some more numbers, courtesy of StatMuse. Ingram against the Thunder, 14.3 points per game on 34% from the field, 25% from 3. And then Luka in this series, 22 per game on 39% shooting from the field and 31% from 3.
And if you told any Thunder fan or any fan, Mavs fan, NBA fan, those numbers before, you'd be like, okay, are the Thunder up 3-1 or is it a sweep?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the objective. They're doing, you're shutting down Luka and Kyrie. You're making them score very inefficiently. I mean, that's the goal. And I think that that's what they'll try to continue to do and make the role players beat them. Again, go back to PJ Washington, Tim Hardaway, that one game just going off. And if that happens, that happens. But I don't think the Thunder are betting that those guys can't do that 4 out of 7 games.
And Dort had a huge steal last night late that led to that run out from Shea to Jaylen for that layup. I think there was a minute six left, yeah, right around there to go up by 5. That was a massive play where they get Tim Hardaway was just trying to get the ball back to Luka, I believe, and Dort, you know, jumped the passing lane, got it, and they were off. But again, another area that they've struggled in is scoring in transition, and in a huge moment, J-Dub was up for it. He really, the only two paint buckets they scored late in that game were the J-Dub drive on the baseline with what looked like a double dribble, but turns out it was correctly called a legal dribble. And then the run out in transition, both by Jaylen in areas that they've struggled in all series. So, yeah, just a super gutty performance. We've seen this team be very resilient all year. And then even still, it just looked like this is not a game that they're going to pull out. And they do. It was obviously a massive win coming back home 2-2. They get home court back. I thought I was going to have to come on here and just full-blown apologize for mentioning that all they have to do is win the home games and they can go to the NBA Finals. I was like, are they really about to not win a game after me saying that? I thought I was going to have to really, really put the hand up to Thunder Nation. That was tough there for a minute. But they come back 2-2, and I did want to ask if you've seen the the court and t-shirt look for game five.
Man, I think it's pretty sweet, honestly. They haven't ever done this before. It's always either been blue or white. This is like a really dark blue City Knights. It's got the orange accents on it. The OKC Thunder lettering is an orange. I think it looks really cool. I can't wait to see how Loud City looks tomorrow night in game five. 18,000 shirts.
An orange. They did orange shirts, I think, once in the Portland series.
That's right. That's right.
I don't think they've done navy since that 2011 Denver series, the first round series in 2011. That was, I think that's the last time they've done navy shirts. I'm very excited. I do agree. The orange lettering across the chest, I think, is going to pop.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to look really, really good tomorrow. And this crowd, like, Loud City has been incredible these entire playoffs. It's been the best atmosphere in the playoffs, the best home atmosphere. And every game, they kind of seem to take it up just slightly more. After that win last night, playing these Mavs and Luka and Kyrie in a game five, and obviously we all know, you know, whoever wins game five wins like 82% time the series. It's such a huge swing game. You can't go down 3-2 and then go back to Dallas. But then if you go up 3-2, all you have to do is win 1-2, and the pressure's on the Mavs because it's a closeout game. So huge game tomorrow. I expect that OKC crowd to be incredible tomorrow night. I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere.
All right. We got to talk about Josh Giddey, Brandon. We got to talk about him. I think we'll preface with this. I think we both expect him to start tomorrow night. Do we agree there?
Yes.
First question, if they were coming back down 3-1, would you still expect him to start?
Yes.
Okay. I would hope so, just for my own sanity. Had they waited till 3-1 to then like make some kind of change, that would have been pretty disappointing. The numbers are interesting and they don't support him continuing to play. Much less start. Minus 36 in 39 minutes in this series. The Pelican series with Valanciunas on the floor so much, being someone that Josh could take advantage of with his speed, I think was a tailor-made series for him to be successful, and we saw that he was great. They probably don't get out of there with game four without him. He was awesome. This series, if you were going to say like what's the archetype for a player you'd want to play against the Mavericks, you'd love to say someone who's 6'9". That's going to be very helpful. The fact that he has been this rough is kind of, I think, an indictment on where he is as a player, like that they can't use him in this kind of series. Dallas is very long and rangy on the wings, and you would want someone of his size to be out there, and it's just been a struggle. It's been really, really tough. Kaysen's been so good, and he's kind of he's forced his way into these closing lineups, and credit to Mark for going to what's worked. But I'm kind of confused as to the persistence to start him, I think, is what I'm most confused by. I probably would not vouch for him to not play at all. But I wonder with how good Kaysen's been on Kyrie and what that would offer them as another, as you could throw J-Dub over on PJ Washington or put J-Dub on Derrick Jones Jr. and let him kind of roam. The options that it would give you to start the game with Kaysen on Kyrie, or just have Kaysen out there and keep J-Dub on Kyrie, I think I'm confused as to why Mark and just seemingly the entire organization has been so flexible and malleable and wanting to be able to pivot and adapt they've been so quick to do that in almost every area, aside from this one. And we're not talking about the best player on the team or even the second best player on the team. On his best night, he's the fourth best player on this team. I'm confused the persistence and why they've chosen to be very rigid here. You can take that anywhere you'd like to go.
Yeah, I think it's the consistency. Like, they value the consistency with what they've done throughout the regular season, like the habit building, all those things. Now, obviously, Mark Daynold has talked about, you know, Isaiah just started for Josh to start the second half. He's talked about how they feel like that's an in-game substitution. Like, there's no difference to him between starting the second half or the third quarter or midway through the third quarter, wherever it may be. You know, I think that they're looking at a big sample size of success and winning as opposed to this series. Now, obviously, throughout the series, like, the numbers bear out, like the plus minus on off. I think it's more of a fit with the starters against this particular matchup than it is anything else. Like, the way that Dallas is defending the starters with Gideon Dort in there at the same time, the way that the OKC offense can attack that Dallas defense, and the way that the Dallas offense can attack the OKC defense. I think that Giddy's numbers, we saw it last night when he came in the third quarter, they had a really nice run that he was a part of. So to me, I do think that he can still have a positive impact and a positive role, even in this series, even if the series isn't the best matchup for Josh. I think he can have a positive impact. It just seems to be, numbers-wise, coming off, you know, playing with the reserves or with that backup unit as opposed to the starters. Because every game they fall into a hole, the starters have to start the game.
Yeah.
Now, I do think that, you know, he's not playing starters minutes. He's playing like 13 minutes, 11 minutes. Like, we're seeing that. So there's been a short leash with minutes. And so I think they're monitoring that. I think they're aware of that. And, you know, if he comes in game five, he hits a couple threes and it shifts the way Dallas, you know, defends him. Or if he, you know, drives to the rim, if they try to hide Luka on him or a big man on him and he can attack it and has some success there, you know, and his confidence gets going and he's a part of, I think the feeling is, when Josh is playing really well, the Thunder hit like a different level ceiling-wise.
I agree.
But obviously, you know, the flip side of that is what we're seeing with all these starts. So I think that's the philosophy. But I do think, especially given last night and the switch up at halftime, you know, if Josh comes in and he's not successful and he's not hitting and they fall into an early hole, I think there'll be a quicker hook as far as, you know, pulling him for Kaysen or Isaiah or Aaron Wiggins would be my guess.
Would you like to see them try Kaysen, or are you more, are you like, despite us both expecting Josh to start tomorrow night, what are your feelings? Like, are you hoping to see it stay the same, or would you like to see it? Cause I don't think there's a huge difference if you're going to go right. You know, if it's predictably going to throw someone else out there at the start of the third quarter, I don't know why you wouldn't at least give it a shot to not fall behind early in the game.
Right. You know, I think there's a lot to say about the fact that this team has started the same five guys and they've all been healthy all season long. Whether it be like a ceremonial start, let him play for like a minute. And if things, you know, if it's a, you know, a slow start in that minute, minute and a half, you know, then you pull, but at least you're staying consistent. I think something like that would be fine. But this is a series that I think is razor thin as far as how close this series is. The margins for error are very, very thin. And the Mavs, you know, you can't just let them start off every game with a 7, 8, 9 point lead in the first 4 or 5 minutes, because you know, you're going uphill from there, and the series is too, it's not like the Pelicans. The series is too close to give away those big head starts every game.
I mean, I think the Thunder's biggest margin last night was the one that they ended the game with. I mean, they won by 5. Like, letting a team jump out to a 7 point lead in this series between these two teams just feels, I guess I just don't know why. And I would love to, I bet they have a great, I bet they have a good answer. I just don't, I would love to know. Because it's not the numbers. Like, it's not the, I don't know that there's a single number they could point to defend it, but they might have a different reason.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would say is, again, going back to, you know, the ceiling when Josh is playing his best, when he is, you know, he does provide some rebounding and some good playmaking and a good connective piece. He's really good in transition, all those things. Kaysen feels like some secret sauce specifically to this matchup with Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, all of a sudden, if, you know, you're trusting Lu Dort on an island with Luka, if you could kind of put that same trust with Kaysen Wallace on Kyrie, that changes the way that you can defend the perimeter and the lob threats and things like that. If you feel like Kaysen can track Kyrie one-on-one, or at least close to it, maybe shade some help sometimes and things like that. So maybe trap the PNR and those things. But Kaysen specifically for this matchup seems like a guy that they have a little cheat code.
I also don't think it's a coincidence that J-Dub's struggling on the offensive end while he's having to guard someone like Kyrie. Like, spelling him more at the start of the game or just at all. And J-Dub played four, right? He was right at 40 minutes last night. Like, spelling him a little bit with Kaysen on Kyrie and being able to put him on someone like Derrick Jones Jr., who you could have him just kind of playing center field on defense with, I think would be valuable on the other end. It's clear that J-Dub is a bit off and has been since game one on the offensive end. He's at times done phenomenal stuff against Kyrie on the defensive end. Kyrie finished with 9 points last night. Second time in the series, he's finished with 9 points. That's a huge win. Yeah. But I think you're going to get similar results from Kaysen while also getting J-Dub some valuable, you know, keeping some gas in the tank for the other end. That's not to make an excuse for J-Dub. Like, this is the playoffs, and I think he's going to learn. I think all these guys are learning what it takes to win these games in this type of environment. It's different. But for now, I do think there are some downstream positive effects of going to Kaysen from the jump. And again, we do not expect them to do that. But I would like to see more than 18 minutes for Kaysen Wallace.
I think he'll get more minutes going forward. I would guess. Like, he's kind of seems like the genie's out of the bottle a little bit with Kaysen and this Kyrie matchup. And he's played so well in these playoffs. They haven't been too big for him. Just the opposite. Like, he's been so good. This goes back to like that first game against the Pelicans and him shutting down CJ McCollum on that last game winning attempt. Like, Kaysen was built for the playoffs. He's a two-way player that, just like the rest of this team, despite their youth, are just so even-keeled and do not get rattled by the moment. So I am all for more Kaysen minutes. Two-way players in the playoffs, that's what it takes to win. And Kaysen,
it's the whole ball game.
It really is. And that's exactly what Kaysen is. Incredible perimeter defender. Such a smart player and such a good three-point shooter, does not take bad shots. He's just built for the playoffs. So give me more Kaysen minutes. I am all about it. And I expect a bounce back from Jada, by the way. Like, Jalen Williams, one, game five is at home. He feeds so much off of the OKC crowd and the energy that he provides the crowd, that the crowd provides him. Plus, this is Jalen Williams. He's such an efficient player. I can't see him, you know, being in a funk for too long. Some of those misses. Now, he had a lot of shots blocked by Lively and Gaffer. Like, they were selling out at the paint. And to J-Dub's credit, he just kept attacking, which is normally what you want to do. You want to keep attacking. Unfortunately, they just they were blocking so many shots. And I don't think J-Dub's used to that. That said, some of the shots that he missed, like his little runner, his mid-range, three-point shots, like a lot of those are shots we're used to seeing J-Dub hit. And I think really, if you looked at one thing and said, okay, what do you think the Thunder will be better at in game five than they were at, you know, these last few games? I would point directly to J-Dub, like, J-Dub's going to shoot better. J-Dub's going to score more efficiently. J-Dub's going to bounce back. And I think that will make the Thunder better all around. Because, you know, obviously Shea's got so much gravity. And when J-Dub's scoring, it provides gravity and allows him to play make more as well.
I thought Chet was really, really good last night.
Yeah.
The defense in this postseason from Chet has been wildly good. And I think the number's 41%. The teams are shooting 41% at the rim against Chet. That's the best number in the playoffs of anyone. And for him to be doing this, obviously year one, is the plan is working. He is as advertised, maybe better. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see. Like, I think a lot of this series, like the rim protection from both teams has just been so good.
Yeah.
And it's caused both teams to have to find a counter. And last night, the Thunder had their counter in Shea. 10 of 14 from the mid-range. He scored, what, he ended with 34?
34. I think it was 14 of 17.
I mean, I don't want to shortchange him.
I know he hit 14, but I can't remember how many he attempted.
He was 14 of 27 from the field. Right. Yeah. He did not make a three, and he did not make a shot at the rim.
Isn't that crazy? That is so wild.
I can't think of many players who could do that, but he has just been amazing. I've said it many times over the last few years, but I just think he would be Kobe's favorite player.
Yeah,
going right now, like his game is. I think Kobe would just be such a fan of his entire demeanor and the way that he plays. The shot from behind the backboard was, it was weird because it was at a point in the game where Shea had reached such a level that I wasn't overly surprised it went in.
Yeah,
like he had pulled them to like within two, and they had gotten a stop, and Shea got the ball and just took off with it. And I was like, I don't know what he's gonna do, but it feels like he's about to score again.
Yeah, yeah. Shea, his shooting was unbelievable, and the degree of difficulty on so many of those shots—they were like turn around, like 18 footers, hand in his face, like. So many tough shots, but that behind the backboard shot, the degree of difficulty on that angle. But we've seen him do it before. Like, yes, it was an amazing shot, but I've also seen Shea do this. Like, he practices these shots. Like, yeah. That's in his bag. That
he hit a couple of them in the New Orleans series.
He did. I'm sure Mavs fans were incredibly infuriated about that shot. Like, what are the chances he hits that shot? Well, I'm telling you. They're better than you think. That's he practices that shot. That's something that it's a crazy shot, but he can hit that shot, and he does hit that shot. Shea was unbelievable. Chet was unbelievable. You know, Chet's rim protection. The fact that the Thunder have two rookies that they close a game four on the road comeback win with, and the fact that these two guys are such incredible defenders already at 20 and 21 years old,
and they don't win the game without either of them. Kaysen hit huge threes in that fourth quarter. Chet hit a huge three in the corner late in the game.
And those two free throws, like, yeah, that's the thing. Two-way players at 20 and 21, it's crazy. Like, the fact that the Thunder had these guys already making big plays in clutch time on the road in the semifinals in their rookie year, like, they're only going to get better. This is the worst that these guys are going to be. They're only going to get better, and they're already playing like this. Like, it's It's pretty nuts. We talk so much about how this team has succeeded and how they're the first team to do this, they're the youngest team to do this, making history as far as their youth goes. But when you really think about it, like, not only are they young, but there's such a maturity about the way that they play. The fact that they don't get rattled. Like, it's not just the talent, it's the mindset and it's the composure that they play with. And I do think a lot of that, you know, it's the kind of players that the Thunder bring in, but also credit to Shea. Like, you have these two teams, and one team is the team that, you know, the narrative has been they're too young, they're too inexperienced. And the other team is, you know, a guy has won a finals, guy's been to the Western Conference Finals, they have a lot of vets. But which team was calm, cool, collected, composed? Which team made mistake after mistake and let, you know, kind of off the court antics and, you know, talking to the refs and those things kind of distract them? And some of that, at least, I think can go to Shea and the kind of leadership he provides and how he never gets rattled. He is always calm, cool, collected, and it kind of starts from there. I think, you know, it goes to the other players too.
Since let's go back to April 5th at Indiana, they lose that game. There's no, I believe, no Shea and J-Dub in that game. Since April 5th, they are 11-2, and they're now 6-2 in these playoffs as the second youngest team in the entire league, as the one seed. I mean, I'm incredibly impressed by the, if you kind of zoom out a little bit, just the body of work for this team when the pressure's really ramped up, the microscope has kind of been put on them. A lot of people curious how for real this team is. I think they have more than acquitted themselves. They are for real. I think we believed that all along, but there's a lot of people that are finding out that this one seed was well earned and well deserved. This team is really good. They play in a Northwest division with the 2 and the 3 seed, and they eclipse them in the regular season and have just been incredible. 11-2 in their last 13 games, all of them they needed. They needed every one of those games to get the one seed. If you had told them on April 5th, leaving Indiana, you're headed to Charlotte and you have to win out to get the one seed, I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
You got to win 5 straight. You got to win 1 on the road, and then you've got to beat the Kings, the Spurs, the Bucks, and the Mavericks. Now, there was some good fortune in there with who ended up playing in some of those, in a couple of those games, based on seeding being decided and all of those things. But that's insane stuff for a young team like this. And then to go in again, a lot of people feeling like the Pelicans had a great shot in that series, didn't sniff a game, didn't sniff 93 points the entire series. And then to go in, blow out the Mavs in game one, and now bring this series back after just the gutsiest comeback win in game four. I'm impressed. And I hope that they continue to get the flowers that they've earned, because this is impressive stuff and stuff to get excited about. Obviously, right now, they're still in the thick of this. But going forward, if you could, you know, if you can zoom out a little bit, what Brandon was just saying about Chet and Kaysen being so vital to big time wins in their first year it's got to make you excited about what's to come for both of those guys and what they're going to mean going forward.
Yeah, I think that we've all kind of become a little numb and desensitized to the whole, they're the youngest to do this. Like, we've heard it a million times. We've tweeted about it. We've talked about it. And so it's just kind of become a thing, like, yeah, they're young. But when you really look at how young they are, that if they were the number one seed next season instead of this season, they would still be the youngest team to ever be the number one seed. The fact that they closed with 2 rookies and a sophomore on the floor, like, they are so far from where their prime is when you're winning with guys who are 20, 21, 22 years old in their prime, is not until they're 26, 27 years old, and they're already doing this, and they're you know, it was like, what, 3 weeks ago that we were hearing that the Lakers should tank the play-in to avoid the Nuggets so that they can get the easy Thunder in the first round. That the Pelicans, it was a blessing in disguise that they fell to 8 so that they could play the Thunder, who were vulnerable because they're so young and so small. That, you know, the fact that the Thunder are doing this, they are so far ahead of schedule. And, you know, it's obviously a season that's a huge success no matter what happens. They're 2-2 in the semifinals. If they weren't to win this series, huge successful season. And if they were to win the series, we're talking about the Western Conference Finals. I mean, they're two games away from the Western Conference Finals. That KD, Russ, Harden era was incredible, wildly successful. They made it to the Western Conference Finals 4 times, which is nuts. This team in season one of their arrival to the postseason is two wins away from going to the Western Conference Finals. That is wild. Whether they make it there or not, the fact that we're having this conversation this early into this Thunder era, this Coors era, is absolutely wild. Like, I think we've just kind of taken it for granted when you do zoom out and look at it and just think about how young and how far ahead of the schedule they are, because expectations shifted, obviously, mm-hmm. when you become the one seed and you win the first round and all those things, expectations are going to shift and change. But if you go back to preseason, if you were to say that this Thunder team would be 2-2 and 2 wins away from the Western Conference Finals, like, how many people would believe that? Like,
I know,
not very many people.
And that 2010, that 2010 team had the coach of the year. Like, there's been some parallels this whole time to that 2010 team. And that team won 2 games in that first series against the Lakers. They won, you know, games 3 and 4 at home. That was kind of the arrival of Loud City, the birth of Loud City. But like, that team was deemed, you know, wildly successful for such a young team, coach of the year, 50 win team. And they won 2 playoff games, which is, that's what up and coming young teams do. They come out, they win their 2 home games. They might force game 7, but like, that's about it, which is great. And this team came in and didn't lose a playoff game until the 6th one. I've just been incredibly impressed. They're very, very much ahead of schedule, like you said. I don't think that we can really put a limit on where this core can go.
Yeah, the Thunder have a guy who's a top 5 player in the NBA. Like, you can stamp it now. Like, it's hard to argue it now. SGA at 25 is a top 5 player in the league. They have 2 up-and-coming stars, 2-way players in J-Dub and Chet. We see what Cason Wallace is already capable of as a 20-year-old rookie. The depth with Aaron Wiggins and Isaiah Joe and Lu Dort playing this like all-world defense against Brandon Ingram and Luka Doncic in the playoffs, and the way that he shot the ball this year. They have the number 12 pick coming in this year's draft. They have all the first-round picks. We're all aware, obviously, like, I'm listing all these things off. I know that everybody's aware of it, but when you really stand back and look at it, like, it's this rebuild, how fast it's gone and how quickly they've had success and how bright the future is. Pretty exciting to be a Thunder fan right now.
I loved seeing, as always, just the airport participation. It blows me away every time. It's something I never was able to do back in the day, but I'm always so jealous of everybody along the fence line. So cool. It's yeah. Cool to see the how much the players like thoroughly enjoy it. And it just looks so similar. Like, it's like a time capsule. Like, that is exactly what Russ and KD and Harden and Ibaka looked like walking down that same fence line. Like it is, it's so similar. And in what it looks and sounds like, feels like to see them participate in, it's awesome. So kudos to the fans. I know the fans are going to, they're going to light up that arena tomorrow night. I'm excited to see it. I'm glad you mentioned the 12th pick. The lottery was Sunday. I wanted to get your just headline thoughts on Oklahoma City with the 12th pick. Are you already eyeing a couple guys that you're interested in, or are you putting all of that off until the off season? Where are you at in grind mode?
So I think that every kind of Thunder beat reporter had become sort of a semi-pro novice draft expert over the last few years. But this year with the Thunder, you know, shifting expectations on us, I don't know if any of us are as much of an expert as we were the past few seasons.
We're going to find out who the posers were.
This would be a good time to bring up our draft boards of last season and where we each had Case and Wallace ranked on our boards. Ryan, absolutely.
you would have the victory lap of all victory laps to take there, my friend.
This season, look, I wouldn't be a Thunder reporter worth my salt if I didn't say that the guy that I want the Thunder to draft at number 12 or to slightly trade up for would be Cody Williams, C-Dub, J-Dub's little brother from Colorado. And he's
C-Dub.
C-Dub. He's a good fit too. Like his size, he can play power forward. He's like 6'8", defender, toolsy, high upside, high potential, but also I think a solid floor just with his defense and playmaking and his finishing at the rim. So I think that Cody is the number one, like, you know, target that we're looking at. But if it's not Cody Williams, there are some other guys. I really like Daron Holmes. He's projected to go lower. Like he's usually like in the early 20s to mid 20s on most mock drafts, but I think he would be a perfect fit as a guy that's a big physical rebounder, shot blocker. It can shoot from the outside. I like him a lot. I like Tyler Smith from the G League Ignite, another big that can shoot. Jared McCain would be fun. Great shooter from Duke. Fun personality. I know Kyle Filipowski gets mocked to the Thunder a lot from Duke, the center. I can see it. I understand it. I don't know that he's exactly the best fit. He's a decent, not great shooter. I'm not sure about his defense. I don't know. Jury's out for me. I think Dalton Knecht as like a wing that can shoot and score and be NBA ready right away is interesting. Tristan Da Silva, Cody Williams' teammate at Colorado, is kind of a plug and play vet. Vet. He's like a 4-year player. Khalil Ware, center from Indiana. Real bouncy, athletic shot blocker, can shoot from outside. Some people doubt his motor. Johnny Furphy, the shooting guard from Kansas, really good shooter, athletic. I like him. So those are my guys. I listed a lot of them.
Cooking. Just let him. I'm over here just like, let him cook. Let him go.
So maybe
clearly in the grind house over there at the Rabar residence. Unbelievable.
It's funny because like I think about like how much time I put into like researching the draft the previous few years. So this year I feel like I haven't put in nearly the time that I should have. But now I'm like looking, like I've like researched all these guys. I've like spent a couple hours on each of these guys. Like, man.
Well, the last few lottery nights have been like the biggest day of the calendar year for us.
Right.
Like it's been insane. And then this year, I don't even think we had even discussed it even on Sunday. We talked about it afterwards, but like we didn't even like converse about this lottery until like after it was over. It was very strange because I remember like, I mean, those were some of the most nerve-wracking. Now we're stressing over Chet's free throws late in the right. late in the swing game four, like unbelievable turn of events. I am going to be excited when the Thunder don't take Cody Williams and I get to send you a picture of Usman Jang and say, we have Cody Williams at home. I'm very, very, very excited to send that, to send that text to you. I hope if you're listening, I hope you carve out some YouTube time for all the names that Brandon just so graciously smacked us with. That was what a thrill that was to listen to. Incredible stuff, more than I bargained for. Just as always, Brandon's ready to roll. We love to see that. Brandon, you're going to be in the house for game five tomorrow, I assume.
Absolutely. I will be there. I'm excited. It's going to be a fun atmosphere. Can't wait.
I assume if you're listening to this, you're following Brandon at Brandon Rabar, but just in case you're not, that's the best place to go. Always giving you some nuggets, some dad jokes, the statistics that you need from the game, after the game, day after the game, all of the above. So Brandon, as always, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ryan.
All right, Thunder fans, enjoy game five. If you're going to the game, let it rip. Cut it loose, and we will talk to you afterwards. This is the Daily Thunder Podcast.